This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
6 aid workers in South Sudan were killed Saturday as they traveled from Juba to Pibor.
That's VOA's Jill Craig reporting. Details coming up.
Also, more than 30 Al-Shabaab fighters killed yesterday by Kenya's Defense Force during a raid on militant bases in southern Somalia. And Uganda is the latest African country to face an invasion of fall armyworms.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Kenya's Defense Force says it killed more than 30 Al-Shabaab fighters yesterday during a raid on militant bases in southern Somalia. Reports say Kenyan ground troops and helicopter gunships attacked the bases in the Baahade district in Jubaland. Weapons, improvised explosives, communications equipment, food, and clothing were said to have been seized in the raid. Kenyan troops have been in Somalia since 2011 to help bolster the Somali government against the Al-Qaeda affiliate. In other Somali-related news, the group Human Rights Watch says the March 16th attack on a boat filled with Somali migrants and refugees off the coast of Yemen is most likely a war crime. More than 30 Somalis were killed when a helicopter reportedly fired on their vessel. All sides in the two-year-old conflict have denied responsibility. However, Human Rights Watch says only the Saudi-led coalition has military aircraft.
6 aid workers were killed over the weekend as they traveled from Juba to Pibor. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig speaks with humanitarian groups operating in South Sudan to find out if this incident will impact their work in the tumultuous young country.
Unidentified assailants took the lives of 6 aid workers Saturday, the highest number killed in a single incident since South Sudan's conflict began in December 2013, according to the United Nations. Working for a local NGO called Greedo, they were killed in the Magri area of central Equatoria state. Jerry Farrell, the South Sudan representative of Catholic Relief Services, says he does not believe aid groups are being politically targeted. Instead, he says they are likely singled out for the same reasons that perceived wealthy individuals would be.
Because NGOs have land cruisers and very often have Thrives or satellite phones, often are carrying cash to the field to pay vendors and pay staff, they're being targeted for those reasons by criminals.
But Ken Isaacs, the vice president of programs and government relations at U.S.-based charity Samaritan's Purse, hesitates to comment on motive.
So there's a lot of nuances, and I just know from my own experience doing this for 30 years that it's premature right now to make any speculation about it. But it rarely is as simple as it appears on the surface.
South Sudan's government told VOA's Daybreak Africa that opposition forces loyal to former first vice president Riek Machar are responsible for the deaths. Contacted by VOA, the deputy military spokesman for the opposition SPLA-IO says the area where the incident took place is under the control of the government and allied militia groups. Samaritan's Purse had 15 staff members abducted in Mayandit in mid-March by an independent armed faction, but all were rescued shortly thereafter. Isaac says the weekend's attack will cause his group to operate at heightened alert.
So it doesn't cause us to hesitate. It makes our resolve stronger, but it also makes us more cautious. So we will put certain measures into place and about how we move, when we move, how many vehicles are in the convoy, how many meters distance can be between them. It'll affect our movements all over the country.
The attack also will not prevent the International Committee of the Red Cross from delivering aid to South Sudan, says spokesman Jason Strazuso.
This extremely tragic incident obviously is at the top of our attention right now. It's added to the latest of the security concerns in South Sudan. But at the same time, given how we operate, because we mostly travel through the air, particularly our personnel, this is not likely to affect our operations, our food assistance, or our medical assistance, we're going to be able to continue to do these because of the way we travel.
Farrell of Catholic Relief Services says the killings have only strengthened the resolve of NGOs working in South Sudan.
We're doubling down. No, I think that's the case for everyone. It's very, very sad, but everyone is more determined to help people who are in desperate need of assistance.
South Sudan's Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission has asked monitors of the country's shaky 2015 ceasefire agreement to investigate the incident. The UN says that since December 2013, at least 79 aid workers have been killed in South Sudan, including 12 this year. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Uganda now faces a big food security threat with the invasion of fall armyworms. The plant-eating pests have already caused damage in Zambia, Zimbabwe, South Africa, and Ghana. And they've also been reported in Malawi, Namibia, the DRC, and Mozambique. The armyworms have been confirmed in nearly 20 districts in central and western Uganda. The agriculture ministry says about 40% of the maize crops have been attacked in some areas. Officials fear the armyworms could destroy 11% of this year's total maize production. Besides maize, the caterpillars attack wheat, rice, and millet, as well as cotton, soybean, potato, tobacco, and sugarcane. The fall armyworm is native to the Americas. UN officials say it could spread to Asia and the Mediterranean region within several years.
As East Africa struggles through a drought, scientists say climate change may be making the situation worse. VOA's Steve Barragona looks at how a warming planet may be altering the weather patterns that bring rain to the region.
The rains failed late last year, and the rains before that were meager. Livestock have died, crops have failed. Famine threatens Somalia for the second time this decade. While drought is not uncommon in this dry region, it's gotten worse, says University of California at Santa Barbara climate scientist Chris Funk.
Yeah, so what we've seen over the last, 35 years is that the rainfall during the what's called the long rains has declined substantially.
Funk says the explanation may lie in an atmospheric cycle that links East Africa and the Pacific Ocean. Warm, wet air rises over the western Pacific, causing rain over Southeast Asia. On the other side of the cycle, dry air descends over East Africa. That's why not much rain falls here, even in normal years. But when the western Pacific is warmer, it pushes the whole system harder. More rain over Southeast Asia and more dry air descending on East Africa. More dry air means more drought. And Chris Funk says the ocean is getting warmer.
The warming over the western Pacific, you know, appears to be, you know, pretty much directly related to increasing greenhouse gases in the atmosphere.
Research shows that in the past, a warmer planet meant a drier East Africa. But Funk says it's not entirely clear whether the current drying trend will continue.
You know, one of the things making it hard to look into the future is the fact that the story told by the global climate models, the climate change models, is pretty much exactly the opposite of what we're seeing in East Africa.
The models say it should be getting wetter, but experts increasingly think the models may be flawed in this area. Funk and others are working on it. The short term is more clear. The Western Pacific is still warmer than average, which means the forecast is for a third season of disappointing rains. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Thank you, Steve. As millions of people around East Africa grapple with a persistent drought, pupils of a primary school in Kenya are learning how to conserve water. Kenya is among East African countries currently facing life-threatening water and food shortages. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, Ruben Chama reports.
The Environment Club of Kiserian Primary School, comprising pupils aged 5 to 14, recently came together at the school's backyard to discuss water-related issues while planting trees and tending their tree nursery bed.
We need water. We need water. From Masai Mara to Transmara. From Elementaita to Taita Taveta. We need water. Water to conserve, water to preserve, water to reserve, water to observe, water to serve, water to dive, water to revive, water to strive, not to stop, for we need water.
The children, grow hundreds of tree seedlings, both indigenous and exotic species, as part of an innovative environmental program aimed at averting the effects of climate change. The government-sponsored school is located in a peri-urban area of Kajiado County, some 26 kilometers southwest of the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. A 13-year-old pupil, Isabayo Rebecca, is encouraging young people to get actively involved in conservation efforts aimed at restoring water catchment areas.
We all need to preserve water. Water is more important than even a meal. Every drop of water counts. We can stop this crisis if we work together, and I would like to encourage young pupils like me to conserve water because it is important. Without it, we cannot survive.
The pupils learn practical ways of making the most of water used at home, like reusing water used for cleaning utensils to irrigate plant seedlings. They are also taught to ensure taps are tightened to avoid water leakage. According to Ms. Joyce Mumira, a teacher in charge of the school's environment club, the project was set up several years ago as a brainchild of the school's young population.
In our school, we have tried our best to make sure that our school looks beautiful by planting trees and using the little water we have. And we know how to reuse the water. That is why we have got a beautiful school with the trees, with the flowers, and also clean classes. Also, the pupils are motivated. They like participating in the club. Like when you call them to come and plant trees, they do so very quickly because they love the environment very much.
The project has received support from the local community and is commended as a practical homegrown solution towards addressing the global problem of climate change and deforestation. Trees planted along streams or wetlands, for example, can clean water and preserve topsoil for future harvests, as well as protect water catchment areas. In marginal areas, trees that require less water can help control carbon released into the atmosphere, which contributes to climate change. In some cases, El Nino can bring heavy rainfalls. In this case, trees also help with flood control. Today, Kenya, just like many East African nations, is experiencing a severe drought causing hunger and suffering to millions. Stacy Nasarian, 12, said she had witnessed members of her own community suffer from the ongoing drought crisis.
In my community where I come from, water is hard to get because we are going to go a kilometer from your home going to fetch water, and that water is contaminated and it can cause diseases. I would like to advise young people like me, if they have free time, they stop wasting water and go and plant trees and water them so that they can grow and bring rain.
Already the United Nations and other donor agencies have issued an urgent appeal for food aid to save millions of lives facing hunger and starvation in several African countries, including Kenya, Somalia, Ethiopia, and South Sudan. At least 12 million people in the region depend on humanitarian aid, according to the United Nations. Experts say the drought has been particularly severe, mainly due to the El Nino weather phenomena, causing poor rainfall that has devastated crop harvests. The Sustainable Development Goals, launched in 2015, include a target to ensure everyone has access to safe water by 2030, making water a key issue in the fight to eradicate extreme poverty. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
19 past the hour, you are listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. In Zimbabwe, a health official says there have been nearly 90,000 new malaria infections over the past 2 months and at least 151 deaths. AFP quotes the Ministry of Health's malaria director as saying heavy rains from December through February increased the breeding grounds for the mosquitoes. Most of the malaria cases are reported in the south of the country, where the rains triggered floods and cut off access to health clinics.
The International Conference for Great Lakes Region and the East African Community are set to cooperate for the first time on economic and security concerns in the Great Lakes region. Moses Habayarimana reports from Bujumbura.
The East African Community is made up of 6 African countries, while the International Conference for the Great Lakes Region has 12 member countries, including 6 from East Africa. In December 2010, both organizations signed a Memorandum of Understanding on joint interventions regarding refugees and humanitarian issues, as well as promotion of democracy and good governance. However, nothing tangible has ever been accomplished. East African Community Secretary General Liberan Fomukeko says there is a need to revive and implement the memorandum.
Our sitting today may not have come at a better time. The current economic circumstances in the region, the security and environmental concerns coupled with the fluid global political dispensation, makes it imperative for the ICGLR to take its rightful place as provided for in Article 26 of the Pact on Security, Stability and Development in the Great Lakes region, to which all EAC partner states are party.
The 2 African regional blocs are meeting in Bujumbura for a technical meeting to tackle the challenges that the 12 African countries are facing. Muita Muburi is the executive secretary of the Great Lakes Organization.
Moment, you know, for us as the ICGLR Secretariat welcoming the Secretary General of the East African Community is to work on the individual mandates, to get a confluence of the individual mandates of the 2 organizations so as to advance the cause of peace and security as well as development, whereas we work more for political intervention to end the conflict and insecurity situations in the region.
One of the major concerns in the region is the deteriorating relations between Burundi and Rwanda. Problems began in April 2015 when Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek for another term in the office, something the opposition called unconstitutional. East African Community Secretary General Liberan Fumukeko comments on the situation.
I mean, the situation between Burundi and Rwanda, I think, may be improving. At the EAC level, this is an issue which has been actually dealt with at the highest level with the summit of heads of states. So I know that for sure that our presidents have been approaching the 2 countries at the highest level and trying to get them together. So the latest discussions I had on this matter are very optimistic.
The technical meetings are expected to come up with frameworks not only to tackle the refugee crisis and political intervention, but also to discourage the illegal exploitation of the region's natural resources. Moses Habyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
This evening, we take a closer look at the complicated political situation in Libya. Russia and Egypt are supporting Libyan National Army commander General Khalifa Haftar, who controls much of eastern Libya. But he is at odds with the UN-backed Libyan government that both Russia and Egypt support. Moscow and Cairo are hoping that the new U.S. administration will even agree with them that Haftar is the best bet for keeping the jihadists at bay in eastern Libya. However, so far, he's refusing to negotiate a political solution. Mark Katz is professor of government and politics at George Mason University. He spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi about what Russia, Egypt, and any other country can hope to achieve by supporting the general.
Well, this is actually pretty standard Russian procedure that when there are 2 opposing sides in a given conflict, it works with both of them. And I think that the idea is that they hope to somehow get the two sides to negotiate, but if they can't, they can manage them. And there's always a threat that, you know, if one side doesn't like this, and Moscow can help the other. But also, I think it's from a very practical point of view, they want to be in good with whoever is powerful, or even partly powerful. And maybe they calculate that way, no matter what the outcome, they'll have some good relationship with one of the winning parties.
So what's in common between Russia's interest in Libya and the goals of the Egyptian government in that country?
Well, it seems that certainly the Egyptian government, you know, wants two things, it seems to me, that it wants security on its western border. That's where General Haftar is operating. And they want their man. In other words, if Libya is to be reunited, much better that it be reunited under someone who is amenable to their interests, it seems to me. On the other hand, certainly the Russians, they would like to become, you know, involved in the Libyan petroleum sector. In other words, they want to have investments there. They want to participate. They want to act. In other words, what they would prefer is that, you know, Libya not act in competition with Moscow, but in cooperation with it in the petroleum industry. There's also, they want to prevent Libya from simply joining the West, or what they perceive that is a possibility. There's also, you know, perhaps the possibility that Libya could provide military facilities. In other words, what they would like is for Libya to go back to a similar relationship that Moscow enjoyed with it under Gaddafi, although it must be said that it wasn't the easiest relationship between Moscow and Gaddafi.
Professor Katz, you argue that the Trump administration may even agree with Cairo and Moscow that Haftar is the best bet for keeping the jihadists at bay in eastern Libya. Can you elaborate?
Well, I think the logic would go as follows, is that they can only work with people who have some degree of power in Libya. In other words, they're not going to create some force from scratch. And that whatever his faults may be, Haftar is better than the jihadists. So if Haftar is working against the jihadists and everyone else wants the jihadists to be kept at bay, then the best thing to do is to work with Haftar. At least in eastern Libya, he may be able to keep order. You know, but of course, that's not clear.
But for a comprehensive solution in Libya, what can Russia, Egypt, and any other country hope to achieve through supporting Haftar, who is refusing to negotiate any political solution and resorting to just militaristic approach?
Well, maybe they don't want necessarily a unified Libya. In other words, maybe they've decided that really Libya isn't one country after all, that it's, you know, really two. And so, to be practical, one should support a government in the east and another one in the west. So, you know, or at least it's uncertain. And until there is clarity, they don't want Haftar to be, you know, an enemy. In other words, what's the point of supporting the government, you know, the UN-recognized government in the West, when it's so weak? And if Haftar is going to be powerful anyway, then surely it's better to have good relations with him than bad relations. And he may be useful. So I think that's the fairly cynical approach, if you will.
That's Mark Katz, professor of government and politics at George Mason University. He spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Dan Crafton, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
next on Let's Talk. What do women want in a relationship? Join host Sunday Shumari and his guests chatting about women and relationships. Let's Talk comes to you Monday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.